Hello, and welcome back to Texas Tech Health Check from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. I'm your host, Melissa Whitfield. We want you to get healthy and stay healthy with help from evidence-based advice from our physicians, healthcare providers, and researchers. Consider the gallbladder. What's its purpose? Does it have anything to do with gallstones? You might go through life without giving your gallbladder a second thought. For others who may have had a gallbladder attack, there are few more painful or confusing experiences. Our guest for today is Dr. Justin Vaughn, Texas Tech Physician's Surgeon. Dr. Vaughn explains the function of a gallbladder and how gallstones are formed, what triggers an attack, and the risks associated with not getting treatment. Dr. Vaughn, welcome to our podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your expertise, and what you do here at the Health Sciences Center?
Yeah, my name's Justin Vaughn. I guess I'm beginning the end of my third year of being with Texas Tech, but I'm originally from South Arkansas. I went to medical school in Little Rock in Arkansas, residency at a place called Mercer University in Georgia. I did my fellowship in surgery critical care at Duke University and then came here after graduation. And then now I've worked 3 full years here, and I focus on emergent general surgery, surgery critical care, and trauma surgery. And doing that, we see a lot of consults for gallbladders in the emergency room.
Well, again, welcome to our podcast. And since you brought it up, gallbladders, that's our topic for this episode. What are gallstones and what are symptoms and complications of gallstones? And what are symptoms of a gallbladder attack?
Yeah, so to kind of break it down, the gallbladder acts as kind of a fuel storage tank to aid in digestion. So it stores bile and bile salts that help aid with the digestion of fatty and greasy foods that we eat. And so during a stimulus of food entering the stomach, there is secretion of the gallbladder and the bile to mix with those food and enzymes to help digest the fats that we eat. Gallstones can form when the gallbladder is not appropriately squeezing, and it can lead to sludge and buildup of sediment in the gallbladder, which can precipitate into stones that can be formed of different things, but most commonly kind of a cholesterol-based stone that can then lodge in the ductal system, causing symptoms such as a gallstone or gallbladder attack. And that'd be where your gallbladder is squeezing against the force of these stones, and it causes a discomfort and pain in the right upper quadrant, sometimes associated with epigastric pain, radiating pain to your shoulder, or some nausea and vomiting. That would be a gallbladder attack. And that's kind of the simplest way about gallstones and how they may occur.
Well, then what causes gallstones? And is there a segment of the population which could be at higher risk for developing them?
Yeah, so as far as what causes gallstones, going back to that fuel tank storage of bile, some of us, we don't have issues and the gallbladder squeezes well, the gallbladder is emptying, but if there's stasis or stagnant bile in the gallbladder, can lead to sediment and sludge formation where things accumulate and form larger and larger stones, causing more symptoms. And as far as a higher risk, as far as population, it's hard to say for sure. I kind of reviewed some literature in anticipation of today's talk, and I don't think there's for sure a certain age, a certain sex, or a certain race where, oh man, gallstones are bound to get you more than other people. But I would say they're very common in our population and everywhere across the country. You're seeing men, women, young and old, increasingly younger people that are more affected by gallstones. So I don't think there's a specific predominance for favoring of one specific sex or race over another. It's just kind of common in the American diet to eat fatty foods and have a poorly squeezing gallbladder and be subject to getting gallstones. So it's pretty common across the board.
Now, I ask that because I heard someone say once that after childbirth, women, that they're more prone to having a gallbladder attack.
Yeah, so you can see increased incidence of symptoms from gallstones in pregnancy because in pregnancy, with the hormonal changes that are going on and the changes in your diet and different things in your body, the gallbladder tends to squeeze less and empty less. So the gallbladder is more full, more stagnant, and then you can have a buildup of sludge that comes out in pregnancy sometimes. So yes, lifestyle changes, including pregnancy, sometimes you can see an increased incidence of gallstones because their gallbladder is not squeezing like normal. But there is an association with pregnancy.
Then can you tell us what could cause a gallbladder attack?
So just to differentiate quickly for some of the other questions too, kind of think of a gallbladder attack in two ways. One way, I think of the gallbladder attack being the stone is in the gallbladder and we squeeze and we feel discomfort. And then number two, to help differentiate an attack from an infection, sometimes these stones can cause blockages and lead to pain, but more seriously, they can cause thickening of the gallbladder, edema of the gallbladder wall, or spread to infection in the biliary system or in our bloodstream. And infection is different, but I would consider it a type of attack that is more serious. And a simple gallbladder attack, I consider pain or discomfort from the gallstone themselves. They can come together, but sometimes those are separate entities. But the most common thing we think of with a gallbladder attack, which would be pain from a gallstone, would be someone eats a spicy or fried, fatty, greasy meal, and that causes a stimulus for the gallbladder to squeeze really hard, and it squeezes against that stone, and you feel symptomatic pain. So that gallstone attack most normally is precipitated by the types of food we eat, and specifically fatty, greasy, or spicy foods can cause that attack to occur.
Is surgery the only treatment for a gallbladder attack? And when should someone go to the emergency room, or should they see their primary care provider?
Right. So I was kind of laying the groundwork with our previous question to differentiate between concern for infection of the gallbladder called cholecystitis versus symptomatic pain from your gallstones. If you're having some pain that occurs with fat, fried, fatty, greasy foods, spicy foods, it occurs in the epigastrium or right upper quadrant, and then it subsides after you finish eating, and you don't notice persistence of symptoms, and you're not having fever, chills, nausea, vomiting, some discomfort with eating those foods, that might warrant an evaluation by your primary care provider. However, if you're noticing that you're having fever, yellowing of your skin or eyes, severe non-relenting abdominal pain, and those types of symptoms, that would prompt a more of an emergency room evaluation and couldn't wait for your primary care doctor. And as far as the treatment for this, ultimately, you know, there are some medicines that can try to dissolve gallstones. They aren't super effective, or else we would not do as many gallbladder removal surgeries as we do. But the primary recommendation, if you're having pain from the gallstones, symptomatic cholelithiasis, or if you have infection, cholecystitis from gallstones, the answer is normally surgery. The options for surgery normally include a laparoscopic or minimally invasive approach where we go in with camera and small incisions, or another variant of that becoming more popular is called robotic surgery for cholecystectomy, where we also use small incisions to remove the gallbladder. No one's excited to have surgery. There are risks and benefits both ways, but the risk of surgery are much less than keeping the gallbladder infected or in the patient and allowing them to have more difficulties, more pain, more risk for infection, and a more risky surgery down the road with years and years of inflammation. So surgery is really the only way to really definitively take care of this problem, and that's why it's a very common surgery for us here at Texas Tech and across the United States.
How can we prevent gallstones and gallbladder attacks?
So thinking about this, for sure, you know, as mentioned, the fried, spicy, greasy foods, if we could avoid those, that might help minimize the stimulus of squeezing on the gallbladder. And if there are stones, maybe you'd minimize your risk of feeling discomfort from those stones. But as far as preventing things, it's really, I think, about lifestyle and lifestyle modification. So things that you wanted to do to try to, say, prevent having a heart attack. I want to exercise, be mobile, watch my diet, minimize my fatty intake, watch my weight, and be healthy. The same things you try to do for generalized cardiovascular health, I think, apply to trying to keep you out of trouble with your gallbladder.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Not that I can think of specifically, other than reassurance for the population that gallstones are common. Not all gallstones are causing pain. Not all gallstones are causing infection. But if you're having a nagging pain associated with your diet and eating fatty foods, I would not just ignore it, because someday it can come back to get you. I'd have a low threshold to mention that to your primary care provider. And certainly if you're having epigastric or right upper quadrant pain with fever or yellowing of your skin or eyes and pain with nausea, vomiting that's not letting up, don't sit at home and ignore that. You know, there's a surgery or, you know, medicines we can help improve your symptoms and make sure you don't get sicker. But I think a lot of people might feel this nagging pain from the gallstones and sit on that for some time until it becomes infected. And then it can be a little more of an emergent situation where we have to take care of it in a faster way.
Well, thanks for all this great information.
I hope that you found it helpful. I enjoyed you having me here today, and I hope that we help some people kind of triage and wonder, you know, is their gallbladder doing well, and are they having gallstones, and kind of what to do next if they've had some of these symptoms.
Yes, especially with all the fairs and festivals and holidays coming up.
Now, I think it's the perfect time to revisit gallbladder health and what can we do about it and what are our warning signs to take action.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Texas Tech Health Check. Make sure to subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. This information is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek immediate medical advice from your physician or your healthcare provider for questions regarding your health or medical condition. Texas Tech Health Check is brought to you by Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center and produced by Tierra Castillo, Susanna Cisnettles, Mark Hendricks, Kay Williams, Tyler White, and me, Melissa Whitfield.